a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Leading us in prayer today will be Pastor, Dodie Nordermeer from the Fort Pierre Ministerial Association. Leading us in our pledge will be Riley Larson from Watertown.
Let us pray. Dear God, as the House begins its session today, I ask you bless each representative, the House staff, pages, and all who help keep state government going. Let us gather together our hope. Help us to let go of attitudes and biases that separate us. Let us recognize and affirm our strengths. Let us be mindful of all the people who have placed trust in us. May today's deliberations hold sacred what has been given to us. We trust in your guidance, Lord. Amen.
I Clerk will please call the roll.
Representative Bartling, Boling, Kamak, Campbell, Carson, Konzik, Craig, Cronin, Dryden, Duvall, Eklund, Erickson, Feichert, Feinstein, Gibson, Greenfield, Donhager, Jennehager, Hayek, Hansen, Hawks, Holly, Heinemann, Heiner, Hickey, Hoffman, Hunhoff, Johns, Kaiser, Killer, Kirschman, Kopp, Latterell, Lust, Magstead, Mame, Mickelson, Miller, Munsterman, Nielsen, Nordstrom, Olsen, Otten, Parsley, Peterson, Qualm, Rasmussen, Ring, Romkema, Rounds, Rosum, Russell, Schaefer, Shanefish, Shrimp, Sly, Soli, Solem, Stalzer, Steele, Stevens, Tolson, Tyler, Vercio, Werner, Wester, Wick, Wink, Wismer, Speaker Gosh. Mr. Speaker, our quorum is present.
Approval of the journal.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee on Legislative Procedure respectfully reports that the Chief Clerk of the House has had under consideration the House Journal of the sixth day. All errors typographical or otherwise are duly marked in the temporary journal for correction, and we hereby move the adoption of the report. Respectfully submitted, Brian G. Gosh, Chair.
Is there a second? Those in favor of approving the journal will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Journal is approved. Do we have the Teacher of the Year present at the moment? And the Milken Educator here yet? Are they standing up behind me? Well, on behalf of the, thank you for coming. On behalf of the Rapid City legislators, we'd like to welcome Katie Anderson, the 2013 South Dakota Teacher of the Year, and Elena Simmonsma, who is the Milken Educator. Let me tell you a little bit about the 2013 Teacher of the Year first. Katie Anderson is that person. She currently teaches science and reading at East Middle School in Rapid City and has taught in the district for the past 8 years. It's the mission of the National Teacher of the Year program to recognize and honor the contributions of the American classroom teacher, and Katie Anderson is that person for 2013. Also, Elena Simmonsma, the Milken Educator for 2012. The Milken Educator is hailed as the Oscar of Teaching by Teachers Magazine. The Milken Educator Awards were created in 1985 by education reform leader Lowell Milken to celebrate, elevate, and activate excellence in the profession. Elena is a fourth grade teacher at the South Park Elementary in Rapid City and has been teaching for the past 15 years. And perhaps the best part of this award is it comes with an unrestricted $25,000. So please welcome them. Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources respectfully reports that House Bill 1003 do pass as amended. Charles B. Hoffman, Chair. The Committee on Local Government respectfully reports that House Bill 1018 do pass. Tim Rounds, Chair. The Committee on Health and Human Services respectfully reports that House Bill 1011, 1019, and 1047 do pass. and House Bill 1020 do pass as amended. Scott Munsterman, Chair. The Committee on Taxation respectfully reports that House Bill 1039 and 1066 do pass. Brock L. Greenfield, Chair.
Reports of select committees.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honor to transmit herewith Senate Bills 7, 12, 37, 63, and 64, which have passed the Senate, and your favorable consideration is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Jeanette Schiffer, Secretary.
And those would be messages. Sorry. Motions.
Representative Lusk moves that when we adjourn today, we adjourn to convene at 1 p.m. on Friday, January 18th, the 8th legislative day. Which motion prevailed?
Shortly, perhaps. Is there a second? Those in favor of the Lusk motion will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. That motion carries. On behalf of Representatives Nelson and Representative Shane Fish, they would like to thank Pete's from Scotland for providing the kookin downstairs. So if you're here or listening, thank you very much for that. Give them a round of applause. First reading of House bills. Again, as a constitutional requirement that each bill have two readings in the chamber, this will be the first reading of these particular House bills. Various members of the chief clerk's staff and pages will be reading those House bills
at this time. House Bill 1090, an act to exempt certain amateur sports coaches from sales tax. House Bill 1091, an act to establish certain provisions regarding the labeling of motor fuel at a retail fuel pump. House Bill 1092, an act to revise certain provisions concerning the expungement of arrest records. House Bill 1085, an act to revise certain provisions concerning the notice given to municipalities and counties for bingo games and lotteries. House Bill 1081, an act to specify the duration of certain municipal appointments.
Speaker assigns House Bill 1074 to Judiciary, House Bill 1075, State Affairs, 1076, Local Government, 1077, Local Government, 1078, Local Government, 1079, Local Government, 1080, Transportation, 1081, Local Government, 1082, Local Government, 1083, Agriculture, 1084, State Affairs, 1085, Local Government, 1086, Local Government, 1087, Education, 1088, Education, 1089, Agriculture, 1090, Taxation, 1091, Commerce, 1092, Judiciary. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 12, an act to update citations and revise certain provisions regarding permits for energy facilities. Senate Bill 37, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the Insurance Fraud Prevention Unit.
Speaker assigns Senate Bill 7 to Commerce, Senate Bill 12, Commerce, 37, Judiciary, 63, Judiciary, 64, Commerce. Consent calendar.
House Bill 1001, an act to require mineral developers to give notice to surface owners before entering the land. House Bill 1026, an act to comply with certain Internal Revenue Code requirements relating to maximum annual benefits paid to members of the South Dakota Retirement System and to provide for the update of references to the Internal Revenue Code. House Bill 1027, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the application of the Special Pay Retirement Program of the South Dakota Retirement System.
The consent calendar items, having had their second reading, are now before the House. Are there any questions? Seeing none, the question before the House is final passage of these consent calendar bills. Those in favor will vote yea, those opposed nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine and the members shall proceed to vote.
Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
Clerk, will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were 70 yeas.
Consent calendar bills, having received a majority vote of the members elect, are hereby declared passed. Are there any questions on the title? Seeing none, titles are deemed correct. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 1023, an act to revise certain rules relating to the Department of Human Services Medicaid waiver programs.
House Bill 1023, having had its second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks? Representative Munsterman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the House. House Bill 1023 was heard in the Health Human Services Committee here several days ago, and it really provides some red tape reductions and revisions to the rules relating to the Department of Human Services. Just so you know that there are two methods available for amending administrative rules, and it was the decision of the Department of Human Services to really pursue the changes through the legislative process. They felt that that discussion warranted that. This bill repeals seven sections from administrative rules dealing with both the choices and family support Medicaid waivers. The rules were repealed because the requirements were no longer mandated by the waiver, and the information was found in the service agreements between community agencies and the departments, or else the rule was not in use. The bill also adds four sections to the administrative rules governing Medicaid waiver programs, provides clarification by explaining the Department of Social Services' role in informing applicants of eligibility decisions for the waiver programs, defining obligation to community support providers, and establishing the rules and rights of applicants to appeal eligibility determination by the department through a fair hearing process. And then there are 28 other sections remaining in the bill that had some revisions to the existing administrative rules, and that was primarily just to update the terminology. For some reason, terminology gets outdated after a few decades. And so with that, I'll stand by for any questions, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Representative Feinstein.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill came through on consent, and you notice it's 20 pages, and something I noticed in it that I had never seen in my other six sessions here is we were statutorily addressing administrative rules. Maybe I missed it in the past, but I don't believe it's ever been done. House Bill 1023 is one of several agency bills this year that are pre-filed, that taken together represent what to me is a disturbing initiative in the South Dakota legislative process. As part of the governor's red tape review, the intent of the bills is clearly worthwhile. I'm not questioning the content or the substantive nature of this bill, but the method of accomplishment to me and its intent, I believe, is deeply flawed. Years ago, when the Administrative Procedures Act was enacted in the 1960s, most of us were either kids, weren't here, or maybe young adults. South Dakota's part-time legislator was already drowning in executive branch legislation, overflowing with detail and minutia. The uniform response in all states, we weren't 51st that time, was for the legislators to grant the agencies quasi-legislative rulemaking authority. In the rules-making promulgation process, number one, it gave the agencies greater flexibility and efficiency in managing the details of their programs. Secondly, it safeguarded the public interest by accommodating public input and openness. Three, it preserved legislative oversight through the work of the Interim Review Committee. And fourthly, it freed the legislator to allocate its limited and very limited time and resources to deliberate more important questions. As I started out, House Bill 1023 in and of itself is fairly innocuous, but as the thin edge of the wedge, it is a cause for considerable legislative concern. Once the agencies realize they can avoid a months-long promulgation process and the repeated contacts with the public that entails, there will be the inevitable temptation to take the quick and easy path of rules ratification by pre-filed agency legislation. The end result could be that the public will largely be cut out of the process of the rules promulgation system, and the legislature will resort to rubber stamping thousands of rule changes that the legislators have neither the time nor the inclination to study in detail, and the agencies will grow still more autonomous. We are a second branch, an equal branch of government to the executive branch, and we should maintain that effectiveness and that authority. Passage of 1023 is not imperative during this 2013 session. Defeat of House Bill 1023 would serve as a clarion call not to trifle with a rules promulgation process that has served us well for about 6 decades. I urge you on that basis to vote no on 1023. Thank you.
Any further remarks? Representative Lust.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I couldn't disagree more with the previous speaker. I served on the Rules Review Committee for 4 years, and going in my seventh term here, we constantly hear how we as a legislature are giving up authority through the rulemaking process. And former Representative Hunt was really the leader in that effort. Be mindful of every time we delegate rulemaking authority. Now we're hearing that by having this body do it through the committee process, that's wrong, and that's not public. I'm perplexed, because for years we've been saying, don't give up rulemaking authority, and now we hear comments that saying, well, maybe we should give up rulemaking authority. So I think the previous speaker's comments are way off base, and I would urge you to support this legislation. We are doing the people's work. It's very public. It's very deliberative. It doesn't take too much of a stretch to read into the comments that somehow we as a body don't do our job. And I couldn't disagree with the previous speaker more, and I hope you agree with me and vote for the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further remarks? Representative Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and members of the body. I serve on the Interim Rules Review Committee, and also served with the previous speaker. And what the objection is that this bill was put on consent so that the members of the body are just voting on it without hearing the merits of the bill. As you know, the laws that we make in this body go into effect on July 1st. They take effect. And then the executive agencies are tasked with promulgating their rules to either make sure that state law or federal law are abided by. We've established the rules promulgation process to do that. And by putting this bill on consent and not letting the full body hear the merits of the bill and vetting the bill, then we are, in effect, not doing our jobs as legislators. And there is a distinct job that the Rules Committee does do. We had some issues this year, some very contentious issues, that some of them that we reverted back to the legislative body because we didn't feel we had the authority to act on them. However, this is the objection, is putting this bill with all kinds of provisions on the consent calendar and not vetting through the legislative system. So I would urge you to vote no. There's no imperative necessity to pass this bill right now. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and members of the body.
Further remarks. Representative Wink.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I too am perplexed because there is a procedure that we can follow to take it off consent. Anybody can come up beforehand and take the bill off the consent calendar. So to wait for now and then ask to vote no on it is going against the procedure that we have. You could have talked to the Speaker, you could have talked to the Chief Clerk, and taken it off the consent calendar at any time. So it's a little bit late to be doing that, so I would urge your passage of the bill.
Further remarks? Representative, would anybody like to speak before Representative Munsterman speaks for a second time? Representative Munsterman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just very briefly, it is off the consent calendar. We are having the conversation, which is how the process works. Human Services Department decided that this had enough merit that they wanted us to have this conversation about this bill. Obviously, it's not about the merits of the bill. We're talking about the process. If you go back in history, this legislature granted that Rules Committee authority to make rules. So, did we abstain, or what's the legal term for that? But did we give up our right? Abdicate, thank you. The authority? No, we did not. We delegated it, and we still maintain the authority as a branch of government. And so with that, Mr. Speaker, I think it's a straightforward issue here, and we need to move on with the vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further remarks? See no further remarks. Question before the House is final passage of House Bill 1023. Those in favor will vote yea. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine, and the member shall proceed to vote.
Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were 58 yeas, 12 nays.
House Bill 1023, having received a majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Are there any questions on the title? Seeing none, title is deemed correct.
Representative Cronin moves that House Bill 1012 be placed to follow House Bill 1025 on today's calendar.
Those in favor of the Cronin motion will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. That motion carries.
House Bill 1006, an act to revise certain provisions relating to the termination of certain mineral interests.
House Bill 1006, having had its second readings for consideration and final passage, are there any remarks?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Solem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 1006 is a product of our legislative oil and gas study this past summer. Our legislative committee had the primary focus on state statute and those issues which may require legislation to handle potential problems with that may arise as a result of our oil and gas exploration and production. In addition to while keeping South Dakota an attractive place for developers to expand their exploration. As a result of our committee work, some 17 pieces of draft legislation were considered and 8 bills adopted by our committee. This is one of 8. Earlier today on our consent calendar, we also had one piece, House Bill 1001. This bill deals with the specific subject of termination of mineral interest. And for definition purposes, mineral interests are considered real property, much like real estate. And in many cases, though, the surface landowner does own the mineral interest under the property. However, in other cases, mineral interests under the surface are owned by another party or parties. While there are many facets to the subject of separate mineral interests, this bill addresses how a surface owner or other parties may reclaim mineral interest should identification of the mineral interest owners be uncertain.
Before a developer can or will express an interest in oil and gas exploration, they need to know who owns the mineral interest in the area they wish to develop. In some cases, through generations of ownership, some of the mineral interest owners may be left unidentified. And this bill clarifies a specific portion of state statute that deals with those interests and further clarifies the procedure in which, through due process, that's an operative word you'll see throughout the bill, through due process for the identification or the transfer of mineral interest. This due process is described in the bill as changes to current statute, noted on page 3, and new sections added as shown on pages 4 and 5 of the bill, which requires a reasonable inquiry of records and databases to try to identify the owners of mineral interest, along with provisions to provide surface owner quiet title to said mineral interest once the due process actions have been completed. And this bill simply clarifies the procedures necessary to identify and assign ownership should all other forms of mineral rights ownership identification be exhausted. This bill came out of our House Ag and Natural Resources Committee with no dissenting vote, and I would appreciate your support. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Any further remarks? Seeing none, the question before the House is final passage of House Bill 1006. Those in favor will vote yea. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine and the member shall proceed to vote. Representative Solem. Granted.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. While I'm up, I might as well take care of some personal business. Here for our 3 o'clock ceremony, I have my family, and first of all, I'd like to introduce my wife, who's playing hooky from the Watertown High School today, Lisa Wave. And in addition, my brothers who came out for the 3 o'clock ceremony, Brother Bob and his wife Janet, Brother Greg, niece Carly, Brother John, who was here for our tourism committee this morning, and Brother Mike. So please welcome my family.
Yes, welcome, and thanks for joining us today in the Capitol. Is the doctor of the day here? He was up in the balcony. Thank you, sir. Please stand and be recognized. This is Dr. Tagasi. He's an internist from Huron. Representative Gibson and Werner, particularly, we'd like to welcome him, but we all do. And thank you for offering your services to all of us today. Thank you. Representative Hunhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Said it's a family way up in northeast South Dakota. This cumulatively spent many, many, many years in this body, and one of the middle guys is right here today with me. Ken Frerich spent 14 years right in here. His father-in-law was in the legislature for many years, Bert Bertram, and his grandpa, Nels Christensen. And then today, better known, he's better known as the father of Jason Frerich. So would you welcome Ken?
Welcome.
Representatives Cronin, Holly, Lust, and May. Oh, he's back. Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were 70 yeas.
House Bill 1006, having received a majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Are there any questions on the title? Seeing none, title is deemed correct.
House Bill 1053, enact to revise the lending limit for state chartered banks.
House Bill 1053, having had its second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks? Representative Konzen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 1053 came out unopposed from state affairs. Many investors are familiar with mutual funds, stocks, and bonds.
A less well-understood category of investments are derivatives, which get their name because they are derived from other underlying investments, such as interest values, interest rates, exchange rates. There were several derivative products that hurt the market and sent us into downturn a few years ago. Buried in the Frank-Dodd Act is Section 611 that requires our state bank lending limits to take into consideration exposure to these derivatives. It was viewed by some that the objective of Congress was to provide transparency in the market because at that time it was opaque. No one knew how many of these products were out there and how much money was tied to these products. Fortunately, in South Dakota, we have very few banks that currently are involved in using these type of products, and they're called interest rate derivatives and are used to mitigate interest rate risks for banks. And the likely scenario that would go on now is in a rising interest rate environment. If banks are locked into long-term loans or CDs and the rates go up, it will compress their loan margins. Thus, banks go to other banks to get from their fixed rate interest rate to get a variable rate. Essentially, we have to take into consideration an exposure to this type of product in our lending limits, and South Dakota currently does not do that. House Bill 1053 will create two new sections in Chapter 51A12 where lending limits are defined. This bill doesn't authorize any new activity. Our banks are currently authorized to enter into these type of products. This will simply tie interest rate derivatives into banks' lending limits. There will be a little bit of additional reporting that is going to have to be done by the banks. The quarterly call report that they do currently has a section where they can define these derivative products. This bill is being brought to allow banks to continue to enter into these products. They are already doing this now, and this will lessen the risk. This is not a speculation type of product. Guidelines are going to be issued if this bill would pass to banks on the expectations and how to apply this. This is the key element we must put into place so that we consider these type of products in the lending limits of each of our banks. 20 states have dealt with this. 3 states have legislative bills in the pipelines. Now, if this bill is not passed, isn't put into place, state charter banks who deal with this product will have no applicable law to govern them. The Office of the Comptroller of Currency, who oversees national banks, has already issued rules on this and how to apply this new legal standard. I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Seeing no further remarks, question before the House is final passage of House Bill 1053. Those in favor will vote yea, those opposed nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine and the member shall proceed to vote.
Wink votes aye. Representative Solem and Steele. Okay, Solem votes aye and Steele votes aye. Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were 70 yeas.
House Bill 1053, having received a majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Are there any questions on the title? Seeing none, title is deemed correct.
House Bill 1021, an act to revise certain provisions relating to child support.
Just one second. House Bill 1021, having had its second read, is up for consideration, final passage. Are there any remarks? Representative Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and fellow legislators. House Bill 1021 is the result of quite a bit of studies that was done this past year by the South Dakota Commission on Child Support. The members of the commission included legislators, a non-custodial parent, as well as a custodial parent, a circuit court judge, a family law attorney, and the director of the Department of Social Services and the Child Support Enforcement Division. As many of you know, that the federal law requires that child support guidelines be reviewed every 4 years. And the 2012 Child Support Commission was also charged with reviewing sections of the law to provide for paternity determinations, presumptions, and disestablishment. from a standpoint of a practical standpoint, for those of us who practice family law, this is really an important bill, and it really addressed many issues that needed to be updated as well as clarified. First of all, I want to tell you what the bill doesn't do, and House Bill 1021 makes no changes to the child support schedule that you normally find in SDCL 257.6.2, and that's primarily because the economic data really didn't support it. There are several sections I'd like to point out to you. Section 1 amends SDCL 257.6.116 to clarify an issue dealing with the proration of health insurance that each party would have to pay as it relates to their child's medical insurance costs, and that clarifies that. Section 2 is really an important provision in that it provides that if a parent fails to provide sufficient information, that the department is able, or the child support referee is really able, to look at the facts that they have before them in order to make a determination. As it is right now, unfortunately, our state law provides that if they don't have any information, they automatically assume that the person is making $35,413. And why that's not a good deal is a lot of these people who don't show up at these hearings that I appear at, they're not making that amount of money, but because of state law, they're going to be assumed that they are, and consequently, all of a sudden, they're becoming really behind in child support, so they give up, and they're not paying any money at all. And so this really allows the child support referee, as well as the division, if they have contrary information, to use that information. Section 3 changes some wording and makes it consistent with the recent South Dakota Supreme Court decision. Sections 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, and 14... really make the terminology gender neutral. Section 9, it clarifies whether or not the department has to also get involved in collecting alimony or spousal support, and it provides that it's only going to be their responsibility if it's court ordered. Section 11 and actually 12 and 13 also include some due process provisions and gives fair notice, as well as providing information to all the parties involved so that they can make a proper determination as to what the proper child support might be. Sections 19, 20, and 21, they clarify existing child support arrearages when you have a termination of parental rights. During that period of time before parental rights is actually terminated, if you have a father whose rights is being terminated, the court will make a determination as to what his arrearages are, so that becomes a judgment against him, so we don't have any lag there. And so that's really an important provision. Section 18 really is also a provision that's been necessary. A lot of you may not know that currently any child born within 10 months of divorce is automatically presumed to be, the father is automatically presumed to be the parent. This allows DNA testing. It allows it so that the proper person is assessed the child support as opposed to just relying upon their presumption. Sections 4, 15, 16, and 17 also deal with some due process as it relates to termination of parental rights. And then the last two sections I want to point out to you is Section 15. It allows the court, when you have situations where you're going to disestablish somebody's rights, that the court has the authority to order DNA testing, and that's an important part of it. And the last provision that doesn't occur very many times, but I've had it happen a couple of times in my practice, is when you have a situation where the presumption's gone into play and somebody actually wants to make sure that they are recognized as the parent, is that they have the right to go into court and ask that they be a part of the lawsuit, that a DNA testing be done, so once again that we can recognize who the proper person is. And then I don't know, Mr. Speaker, at this time, do you want me to bring up the proposed amendment?
Yes, Representative. Is that Amendment 1021-RA?
Yes, it is.
Has it been distributed?
Yes,
it is. Do you move it at this time?
I do. And may I speak to it at this point?
Yes, you may speak to it at this time.
The only reason that this is being added at this time is that when we went...
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. The only reason this is being added at this point is we felt that there needed to be a definition of non-custodial parent. If you'll see through the bill, there's many times the word is actually referred to, but there isn't a specific definition, and this is merely meant to just clarify that so we know exactly what that is. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Representative.
Thank you. Question before the House right now is the Stevens motion. Are there any further comments on the motion to amend? Seeing none, those in favor of the motion to amend will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Hey, we are amended. Any further remarks, Representative Stevens, on the House Bill 1021 as amended? Any further remarks? Seeing none, question before the House is final passage of House Bill 1021 as amended. Those in favor will vote yea, those opposed nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine and the members shall proceed to vote.
Representative Peterson. Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
Clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were 70 yeas.
House Bill 1021 as amended, having received an affirmative vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Are there any questions on the title? Seeing none, title is deemed correct. Just one second, Representative. We have an update coming your way.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Schaefer.
Personal privilege.
Granted.
I would like to recognize the family, the memorial service for Leonard Andre and his wife, Kay, and their daughter, Angie, and their son, Dan, and wife, Linda, and son, Brady.
Welcome, folks.
House Bill 1031, an act to revise certain provisions regarding parole date calculation.
House Bill 1031, having had its second reading for consideration and final passage, are there any remarks?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Johns.
Members of the House, House Bill 1031 is an act to revise certain provisions regarding parole. It is brought at the request of the Department of Corrections. The current statute refers to quote-unquote indeterminate sentences. Prior to 2004, this was a sentence option available to judges, whereby they would sentence a defendant to, example, two to 10 years. After the inmate was in the penitentiary, then our parole board would consider additional facts and then set the sentence at a specific number of years. Section 2 of this bill would delete that reference. Section 1 amends the statute for suspended sentences. This is a case where a judge might sentence a person to 10 years and suspend 6 on certain conditions that the judge expects that person is going to comply with. Under our parole statutes, anyone sentenced to a term of years is entitled to parole prior to the completion of their sentence. If the sentence, in our example, is for a violent crime, the inmate has to serve one half of their sentence before they qualify for parole. With a suspended 6-year sentence, the 6 years of the 10 years suspended, the first parole date that they would qualify for parole is based on the 4 years. Therefore, they would have to serve a minimum of 2 years before they would be able to qualify. While in prison, every inmate must comply with an individual program directive or an IDP. If our inmate complies with that IDP and the conditions of his suspended sentence, they are then released on parole at the end of their 2 years without appearing before the parole board. This is called presumptive parole. If, however, once they are on parole, they violate, then they're brought back before the parole board, their sentence is revoked, and they are then sentenced to whatever the balance of that suspended sentence is, which in our case would be 10 years. Their parole date then is set at 5 years. At that point, they appear before the parole board at the 5 years. However, the parole board then has discretion whether to release them. Now, what this bill changes under our current law is in the case where an inmate is violated prior to their presumed release date, prior to our 2 years and under our example. In that case, they also have their sentence revoked, and then they, when they appear before the parole board and they are given a new parole date, which in our case would be the 5 years. However, that parole, since they didn't finish their sentence under the first provision whereby they would have the presumed parole, that second parole is, again, a presumed parole. In other words, what it boils down to is this. Ordinarily, your parole board has discretion whether to release them or not. But if they violate before they would reach their presumed date, the second parole is again a presumed parole. Any questions?
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Seeing none. Question before the House is final passage of House Bill 1031. Those in favor will vote yea. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine and the member shall proceed to vote.
Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were 69 yeas, one nay.
House Bill 1031, having received a majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Are there any questions on the title? Seeing none, title is deemed correct. Representative Lust.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that we defer the remainder of today's calendar to tomorrow, the 8th legislative day.
Those in favor of the Lust motion will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. That motion carries.